Worldview Radio and WVW-TV is made possible because of listeners like you. Thank you so much for your tax-deductible contribution that you can make at WVWFoundation.com. That's WVWFoundation.com or by calling 901-825-0652. That's 901-825-0652. You can also send your tax-deductible contribution via check to WVW Foundation, P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee 38027. That's again, WVW Foundation, P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee 38027. Thank you for helping make possible Worldview Radio and WVW-TV broadcasts.
Brannon House Live. Whether the issue is law, science, economics, history, family, social issues, education, religion, government, or national security, Brannon brings the issues of the day into clear focus through the lens of a Judeo-Christian worldview. And now, here is your host, Brannon House.
Good evening and welcome to the broadcast. We have a full show for you tonight that will include Susan Swift. She's an attorney with the National Right to Life League. And I'm having her back on because there's a lot of talk about the abortion pill. I want to talk about that pill. What's that really all about? The Biden regime is talking about setting up and hauling kids across the borders of states that ban abortion. There's several major topics to discuss with her. Plus, she was just at another hearing in California. I want to hear about that. Then we're going to be joined by John Eitzmo. John Eitzmo is a constitutional attorney. It'll be his first time to be a guest here. I've known John for 20-plus years, but it'll be his first time to be a guest here on Lindell TV. We're going to talk about the fact that the liberals are having an absolute fit over the Supreme Court ruling that said that Coach Kennedy did not violate any laws when he was silently praying at the 50-yard line at the end of football games. Now the left is declaring that the Supreme Court is trying to establish a religion, that they're violating the separation of church and state. Then we have some curriculum down in Florida that Governor DeSantis and his administration have been promoting that talk about the general principles of Christianity and the Founding Fathers. And again, the left, well, they're having a fit that somehow, again, the separation of church and state is being violated. Is the separation of church and state in the U.S. Constitution? And if so, how is that defined? What does that mean? The wording is not there, the principle. And the principle is what? We'll discuss that tonight with constitutional attorney John Eitzmo. Then we're going to have with us tonight Don Brown. Don Brown is someone that we have had on my network before, WVW Broadcast Network. He's close friends with Billy and Karen Vaughn. Billy and Karen Vaughn are the parents of Aaron Vaughn. Aaron was one of the Navy SEALs shot down over Afghanistan in 2011. They were on a helicopter named Extortion 17. I believe it was carrying like 30, 31 American souls, and it was shot down. It didn't have to happen. Backup was not allowed to be used. They were not waved off, even though there were people on the ground, terrorists, seen what looked like carrying shoulder-launched rockets. And yet people in the air in a certain airplane circling, one individual who's in my documentary, Siege, says we were trying to get permission to wave them off. It's almost as though Extortion 17 was shot and taken down on purpose. Is that the case with the Obama administration? Were they trying to take out SEAL Team 6? Did it have anything to do with their raid on Osama bin Laden? And don't forget, loose lip Joey Biden, he was the one that outed SEAL Team 6. We'll discuss all that with Don Brown, author of the book on Extortion 17. We've got a busy night. Before we do, We have sad news to report tonight. Our friend and our broadcast partner, Dr. Zev Zelenko, has passed away. Many of you know that Dr. Zev was battling cancer for many years, and we were very concerned about him, and we monitored his condition as best we could. I know I personally checked on him quite a bit. In fact, my last text to him was just that, just texting to check on you. Many times I thought he would just finally decide to quit making these public appearances due to his health and maybe his lack of energy, but he refused to stop appearing on this show or other shows. He did so up to the very end, even making videos, I'm told, from his hospital bed and putting out, you know, telegrams and other things. Dr. Zev Zelenko was not only a friend, he was also my personal doctor in that when I got COVID earlier this year and was horribly sick, it was Dr. Zev Zelenko that came to the rescue of my wife and I and got us the medicines we needed, including getting us ivermectin and other antibiotics. I couldn't get well. I couldn't make the turn. But Dr. Zev Zelenko came to the rescue. We honor Dr. Zev Zelenko not only for his wonderful work in medicine and science, we honor him for his courage and his bravery. He came out and he spoke out about the truth of what was going on with the COVID virus, even in the face of a lot of opposition. Early on, he was the lone voice in the wilderness in many regards, along with a few others like Dr. Peter McCullough. Dr. Zev Zelenko leaves behind a wife and I'm told seven children. Please remember Dr. Zev and his family in your prayers tonight and in the future. Dr. Zev was a Hasidic Jew. He lived in New York, and after going through, well, what the governor and mayor of New York put that state through, he decided it looked a little bit too much like Nazi Germany, and he decided to flee to, well, a freer state. He went to Florida. Dr. Zev Zelenko, as a Hasidic Jew, he and I talked about our love of the Jewish people, my love of the Jewish people. We talked about Israel. We also disagreed with Israel. We love the Jewish people, but he and I both talked openly on the air about how concerned we were with what the nation state of Israel and their government was doing. Dr. Zev Zelenko and I were able to divide our love and affection for the Jewish people and their right to that land without having to agree with everything the government of Israel was doing, particularly when he said that they were finishing what the Nazis and the Holocaust started. He made no secrets about that. He spoke about it. It's archived on my website at wvwtv.com, at frankspeech.com. I appreciated his honesty, his clarity, his willingness to say the hard things. But he was always a perfect gentleman and always concerned about, well, not only our country, but the Americans that live in this country. Here's just a few minutes of one of my last interviews, not the last, but one of my last interviews this spring with Dr. Zev Zelenko. Let's play a few minutes. Joining me now is my friend Dr. Zev Zelenko. You know, Dr. Zev, that's my friend David Baldwin, retired FBI agent. He said when he came on tonight, the last time I was your guest, I was followed by Dr. Zev. So I said, it's not planned that way, but he's an admirer of yours as well, retired FBI agent David Baldwin. Well, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Zev.
Thanks so much for having me.
No, thank you for making time. Logan, I'm going to send you something into the control room real quick. Should have sent it to you before. Let me send it to you by email so that maybe you can bring it up on the screen and show it. Dr. Zev sent me this today by text, and we'll get started talking about it, Dr. Zev. Is this on your Substack, or where is this that you put this?
Me, I have my social media, Telegram and Getter.
Getter. Okay, social media, Getter. All right. Tell us about this letter. It's from the Senate Chamber, Topeka, State Capitol, Kansas. Tell me about this letter, please.
Well, it's extremely important. It's, I believe, the first state to have the courage to do something like this. And I think I should just read it, or maybe read it, and it'll speak for itself.
Yeah, you read it. Yeah, or I could read it, but you read it if you'd like.
I have to find it myself. So.
Okay, I'll read it. Okay, here we go. Dear healthcare provider, you can see it's on their letterhead. As we have struggled mightily over the last 2 years responding to the COVID virus, one issue of particular importance has now become indelibly clear. passive early treatment of COVID infections is no longer acceptable or the standard of care. The standard of care is early treatment with FDA-approved medications, regardless of their labeled uses. Delays in institution of these treatments are no longer acceptable. The healthcare provider has a legal duty, to ensure facilitation of treatment as expeditiously as possible. Delayed treatment worsens outcomes. All providers caring for those infected with COVID.
We'll hold it there, Logan. I just wanted to play a little bit for our audience, just to remind it, for those maybe who didn't know who he was or needed a refresher as to who he is. And there's just dozens of interviews, or I don't know how many. I shouldn't say dozens. I don't know how many. But there's a lot of interviews that we began doing with him between radio and television in early 2020. So again, we honor the life of our friend and broadcast partner, Dr. Zev Zelenko, who passed away today. Joining me now is Susan Swift. Susan is an attorney with the Right to Life League. She's based out of California and has once again returned to the Capitol there in California to give testimony. I reached out to her and invited her to be back on the broadcast because I specifically have some questions about the abortion pill. Apparently now some national chains are rationing the abortion pill in states where abortion is now maybe not even allowed, or the threat of it being outlawed by the ruling from the Supreme Court that kicked it back to the states. And this has a lot of people trying to snatch up this abortion pill. I started doing some research on it and found out this is quite a dangerous pill, not obviously only for the child, but also for the mother. I reached out to her and asked her if she could join us tonight. Susan, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me back on, Brannon.
Thank you. Let's go to this. You just sent me actually this article a while ago, and I was able to grab it. The abortion pill has killed dozens of women. Thousands rushed to ER with medical emergencies. Talk to me, what is the abortion pill? Is this different, Susan, than the morning after pill?
It's RU486. It's called Mifeprex or Mifepristone. Those are the generic, that's the generic name for Mifeprex. And what it is, this is a chemical abortion, all right? It is not surgical. It is used typically for gestational ages 12 weeks and under. This is according to the FDA. That's when it's considered safe, under 12 weeks gestation. And it's a two-drug combination. It's like a cocktail. So you take Mifeprex first. And what that does is it interferes with the woman's progesterone, the production of progesterone, which is a natural part of pregnancy process. It sustains and keeps the growing baby inside nourished so that the placenta is growing and everything is maintained. That's the hormone, the natural hormone. Mifeprex stops that. And so what the baby does is slowly starves to death. And then a couple of days later, you take a second pill. It's Mifepristol, I believe is the name of it. And what that does is it induces really extreme uterine cramps to force the baby to be expelled from the womb, basically to force a labor, all right? And so the woman goes through this and then delivers the half-starved to death baby, sometimes alive.
Mm.
And yes, so the FDA recommends Mifeprex and this, you know, the combination only for cases when you're 12 weeks and under, the first trimester. Second trimester starts at 13 weeks, from 13 to 28 weeks. At that point, the baby is too large to be able to be suctioned out or by a catheter like in a normal surgical delivery. And so the use of the chemical abortion is also much more dangerous for the woman because the baby is much larger and the baby may also survive the attempted abortion, and so that you can be delivering a baby that, you know, 17 weeks and obviously before viability, but is still alive. So it's very dangerous at that point. Also because past 13 weeks and on, the developing baby and the placenta is more secured or kind of connected in the mother's uterus and doesn't always come loose. It doesn't release and come out of the uterus. So the forced birth is also very much more dangerous for the woman. You can have infection, hemorrhaging, all kinds of complications, including death. There's been 26 recorded deaths from the use of the from the abortion pill, and that's only the ones that we know of, because the FDA stopped reporting on that, stopped requiring doctors to report it back in April of 2021. So we don't know if there's any more deaths after this. So, but we do know 26 women have died. I think there's about 500 or so cases of severe infection.
Uh-oh. Did we just lose her, Logan? Yep, she just froze up on us. All right, let's call her back. We'll pick it up right there, because I want to continue on this topic for a few minutes before we go to Attorney John Eitzmo and then Don Brown about Extortion 17 and SEAL Team 6, and if Barack Obama played any role in that being shot down, the largest loss of Navy SEALs at one time in American history. This article at lifenews.com reports the abortion pill has killed dozens of women, thousands rushed to ER with medical emergencies. This was published May 14th, 2021. And of course, now we're reading today that some national chains are rationing this. I want to ask her if this is over the counter. Does it require a prescription? Are these women taking this and then delivering the baby at home? I mean, how does all this work? I mean, this seems like a major, major health problem, and that the states are allowing this to be legal. It says here on Thursday, the New York Times published a great essay from feminist writer Jessica Valentine entitled "The Anti-Abortion Movement Can't Use This Myth Anymore." She applauds the FDA's new policy of allowing women to obtain chemical abortions without a doctor's visit for the rest of the COVID-19 pandemic. She's confident that expanded access to the chemical abortion drugs will provide ample evidence of their safety. Well, I think we're finding that's not true. As such, certainly not safe for the baby. As such, if the safety of chemical abortions is well documented, she argues that future pro-life efforts to limit access to chemical drugs in the name of protecting women's health can be easily dismissed as hypocritical. In her essay, she exudes plenty of confidence, but provides readers with precious little evidence to support her position. She confidently states that chemical abortions are, quote, safer than over-the-counter ibuprofen, end quote. She cites one study which appeared in the Journal Contraception in 2012. However, a 2015 study that appeared in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, which used comprehensive data from California's Medicaid program, found that chemical abortions had four times the complication rate of first trimester surgical abortions. Additionally, as of 2018, the FDA has attributed 24 deaths and over 4,000 adverse events to chemical abortion pills. Since abortion reporting requirements in the United States are weak, the actual numbers are likely higher. I highly recommend you find this article. It is, again, an older article from back in 2021, so last year, but still an excellent article in light of the fact that I was just, again, reading today. Apparently, this has become quite the drug of choice now and is actually being rationed. So we need to find out more about this, and I'm curious now to watch to see what states do with this. Be very eager to see if states start outlawing this. Welcome back, Susan. I was just reading from the article there at lifenews.com. I guess my question to you would be, is this over-the-counter? And if, well, number one, is it over-the-counter? Number two, how quick does it induce an abortion? And do the women go to the hospital, or they just do this at home?
Well, what's going on is that now, because the Biden administration has lifted any requirement that you go in and get an ultrasound to find out and date your pregnancy to find out how far you are along, that's what's going to risk more women's lives with this. That's a shame. But what happens with the abortion pill, if you're going to get it through telehealth medicine or other means, maybe over the counter, they will take the drug at home. They will starve the baby, and then 2 days later, they'll take the second pill, and they'll start having abortions, you know, the miscarriage, the delivery at home. And they can be alone doing this. They don't have to have a doctor or anything around. This is very, very dangerous. It's very concerning. So the problem is that these drugs are going to be shipped anywhere, you know, from just shipped. We're not going to have any, no doctor oversight or anything, and the complications can be very severe. So it's a real trouble.
Do the mothers, quote, mothers, Do the, quote, mothers, I mean, how can you do this? But do the, quote, mothers then take the child, wrap it in, a bed sheet or something and throw it in the garbage? What do they do?
I don't know, but we might see more of that thrown in the trash can, dumped in the toilet. Who knows? But it's just gruesome that they're doing this and that they are probably going to be alone when this happens to them, because it's a long process for them. And if they have misdated their own, if they don't know how far along they are, and most women don't because it's a little bit of a guess, if they're too far along for this to work as efficiently as the abortion cartel would have it, right, then you're talking about complications where maybe parts are not all the way expelled. The baby is dead, but it's maybe still inside. And that's when you can get the sepsis and the infection and things. So it's very, very dangerous for women to take past about 12 weeks. But here is our federal government trying to make an end run around states which have the right to legalize or not the abortion process. And because Dobbs has now overturned Roe versus Wade, the states should be able to decide it. And here is the Biden administration making sure that certain states who have banned or will ban the abortion pill, well, the federal government is attempting to make sure that the abortion pills and the chemical abortion still come to women in those states. They're trying to undermine state law.
So let's make that very clear. Some states have outlawed this, and yet the Biden regime is saying, we're going to make sure that it gets into the hands of the women in those states and help them commit a state crime.
I had heard Biden mention something like that, and that is very troubling to me because the Constitution is very clear. There is no right to abortion in the Constitution. We've had a Supreme Court case that's confirmed that now, and given the right to the states, confirmed our right as individuals in our states to determine what is best for us, right? And so there are going to be certain states. I believe Oklahoma is one of them, but you can't quote me directly, but there's one or two that are attempting to ban the use of this very dangerous, chemical abortion drug. And here is the Biden administration attempting to make an end run and pontificate and make sure that these drugs do get into the hands of women, perhaps through telehealth or just direct shipping, whatever way. But that is undermining the laws in that state. If the state has said you cannot take the abortion drug, the chemical drug, then without a doctor's supervision, right? That would be a health and safety issue for the woman, right? That would be very reasonable for a state to say, look, if you're going to take the chemical abortion drug under the, 12 weeks, we want you to go into a doctor. We want you to have an ultrasound scan. Perhaps a state makes a law like that. Well, it appears that Biden is trying to make an end run around that and ship these dangerous chemicals directly to women in defiance of the Supreme Court decision and in defiance of state law.
How many states, or do you know, I know I'm asking you questions off the cuff here, but do you know how many states have outlawed this abortion pill?
I do not know that yet.
Okay. So I was also preparing my news report, and I hear that there's also an organization out there that is going to help get women basically what's one described as an abortion Uber and get them transportation out of the state, over the line, into the next place. So they're pushing this. And by the way, I understand from the news report that our team is preparing, and I was reading and studying for that report, that they're also going to tell children how they can get around parental notification if they're below a certain age so they can have an abortion without their parents' knowledge. These people are just evil.
This is happening in California because of California has already made it so that children, 12-year-olds, can get an abortion without parental knowledge, without parental consent, nothing. It's all secret. But I do want to give you a little bit of good news about the abortion pill. It can be reversed in some circumstances. It's called abortion pill reversal. And if a woman changes her mind, she's taken the first pill, which is Mifeprix, and she wants to change her mind, if she gets progesterone in time, it can sometimes save the pregnancy and save her her baby's life. And so anyone who is interested in finding more about the abortion pill reversal process, they should Google it and find out, because it's safe, and there are doctors who can administer the life-saving progesterone to a woman to save her baby if she changes her mind.
Wow. Well, thank you for that. All right. Now, you've just returned from the state capitol in California, correct?
Yes, I was up there this morning.
In Sacramento?
In Sacramento.
I'm glad I got that right. After I said it, I thought, why did I say the state capitol? Maybe I don't remember my state capitals from junior high, but I got that one right. All right. So what were you up there doing?
I was opposing some more of these really horrific abortion bills. And the one that has really kind of captured national attention is AB 2223. It's authored by Buffy Wicks, and it's going to legalize infanticide. I have called that bill Buffy's Baby Slayer Bill, because that's exactly what it does. What it does is it prevents any prosecution or investigation of a woman who chooses to have a self-induced abortion or any other form of abortion, any kind of reproductive choice that she chooses. She cannot be investigated at all. It doesn't matter. It includes also perinatal death due to causes that occurred in utero. Now, that's not defined anywhere in law. The period of perinatal is up to 28 days in California, and it means after birth. Prenatal is before birth. Perinatal is after birth. So a baby that dies after birth, up to 28 days later, if someone can point to a cause that occurred in utero, no one can investigate the death. No one can investigate the mother. No one can investigate anyone who aided or assisted her in obtaining that pregnancy outcome, the death of the baby after it was born. And there's nothing anyone can do. The coroner is stripped of his ability to investigate that. That is what AB 2223 does. However, unfortunately, Buffy Wicks doesn't even know the content of her own bill. And I presented my testimony, and then Senators Melendez and Senators Grove both grilled Buffy Wicks on her lack of knowledge about the bill. And that just concluded actually this morning. I will try to send you that so that you have it in video form. It was epic. What Senator Melendez asked Buffy Wicks, she said, well, tell me more about this, the infanticide, and what does perinatal death due to, you know, causes in utero mean? And Buffy said, well, I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a doctor, so I'd have to refer you to, you know, her people. And Melendez shot back and said, but you're the legislator and this is your bill. This is your language. So it was quite epic. And I was glad that I was able to assist up there. Unfortunately, though, the Senate Health Committee finished its deliberation today and passed the bill out of committee. So now it's going to be going on to the next step before the full assembly or the state Senate. And we'll see what happens. But here's an interesting thought. I believe Governor Newsom, who's the governor of California, he wants to run for president, I think. And I don't think he wants to have AB 2223 kind of around his neck. I don't think he's going to want to sign this bill because there's been such controversy about it and senators are asking questions. I think if we keep focus on this and make this bill toxic, because it is, it's very, very dangerous to babies, right? I think he may just want to wait and let this thing die in committee or something and not sign it. We have to keep the pressure up on California, because that is where abortion began, and they're continuing their fight to bring abortion, you know, without end in the state of California. And that's why we keep fighting it. That's why the Right to Life League keeps going back and fighting these bills in Sacramento.
If it gets done in California, it'll spread to other states.
That's how it all started, and it will. And that's why the fight has to come to California. The pro-life movement really needs to step up in California. Please help us. We're at the Right to Life League. We're a small nonprofit, and it would really help us. Anybody can give through our website, which is righttolifeleague.org, righttolifeleague.org, or .com. We've got them all, Right to Life League. We don't have any merchandise. All of our money goes to our programs to educate, to advocate, and to help serve all of the pro-life clinics and centers and maternity homes in California for free so that they can keep their doors open, that they can get the help and the training and the supplies, whatever they need. What we can do for them, we do. And so if anyone can help us with righttolifeleague.org or .com, anything will help, because the fight now is in California. It's in these blue states. We've won such a huge battle. And now all it really takes is for people to step up. There's hope now. We can start turning around the laws in these states one, by keeping pressure, by highlighting bills like AB 2223, Buffy's baby slayer bill. We have to put the pressure on these legislators. And that is how we win the war against abortion and how we change America. It's one state at a time. Please help us in California, because we're in the belly of the beast.
Absolutely you are. Okay, Susan, I want to get that those clips from you. And what we can do is have you back next week and play some of them. And maybe you can get one of the state senators that was doing the grilling to come on with you. Have you and one of the
state... I will reach out. It was quite epic. You will love it. And well, I will do my best to get it to you.
That would be great to play that. Have you and one of those state senators on and play it and talk about it. It'd be a great conversation. And I think the nation would like to see it. Thank you again for all you're doing there at the Right to Life League and your website, righttolifeleague.org, right?
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan. Talk to you next week. Happy 4th.
And God bless America.
Yeah. And thank you for all you're doing, for going all the way up there and doing all that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Susan checking in. Susan Swift, hope you'll check out their website, righttolifeleague.org. We'll be joined by constitutional attorney John Eitzmo in just 1 minute. But before we do, folks, I want to remind you, look at all the things that we cover. Look at all the things we do. And if it isn't for you supporting us, we would not be here. We are a listener-supported broadcast. We mean that. Folks, when Mike Lindell and I launched this network on April 19th of 2021, I said to him, look, I'm willing to help build this network and launch this with you, and we'll fund it around my pillow. And so I went to him with this idea, and he bravely agreed, and we launched it. And I can tell you, as the guy that administers this network every day, 24/7, that our funds and our ability to add new hosts, to buy new equipment, Wayne Allen Root, we're going to be bringing him on Lindell TV 2. We've got to send him very expensive equipment so he can then beam his picture into our control room. We drop in the lower thirds. We run his open. We run his close. We bring on his guests. We bring up all of his visuals. It's all run out of our control room. Our control room is hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars in equipment. We bought all that since we launched this network. I had a lot of it. But then we immediately started building it and adding more to grow the network, to continually buy new equipment to add new hosts. Takes money, not to mention the bandwidth. So to do all this is 100% like really NPR. But instead of us doing like share-a-thons or doing telethons, we just simply ask you to support us and get something in return by going to mypillow.com. In this case, we ask you to use the promo code B66. It's a powerful promo code, save you up to 66%, and then a generous portion of each purchase comes back to keep this network going and to have the funds we need to grow it and add the new host and the additional new equipment that we're always needing to order. So let me just take you quickly to frankspeech.com, or you go to mypillow.com. But remember, we have the lowest price available now of the MyPillows, $19.88, lowest ever. Why don't you buy them for someone else? Housewarming gift, wedding gift, kids going to college this fall. Maybe you need some for your bedroom, guest room. However, this is a great price. Maybe buy them for Christmas gifts, put them away in a closet somewhere. This is an incredible price. The slippers, this model is going to go out. Now, I own these slippers. I love them. I own both these pair. This pair right here where you slide your foot in, and this pair like a traditional moccasin in the back, the brown pair. We love them. Logan loves his. I love mine. They're normally $139.98, now $49.98. Why? This is the model that they're phasing out to bring in the new model. So they're clearing out their inventory to make ready for the new model. When it's gone, it's gone. So you save quite a bit, folks. Use that promo code B66. We're also throwing in Mike's book, in itself a $20 value. Buy one, get one free. My Pillow bed sheets. Buy one, get one free. Giza Elegance My Pillows. Buy one, get one free. Anywhere Roll and Go pillows. Buy one, get one free. Six piece towel set. These are incredible deals. There's the dog bed. Delta's over here sleeping on. The mattress topper, the mattress protector. The mattress topper's right down here somewhere. I'll find it. Where'd it go? The 2-inch mattress topper. Where is it? There it is. Those will do wonders for that college dorm, at least fall for the kids. So again, do some shopping for someone else. This is how we support what we're doing. It's absolutely vital that we have your support if you want this network to continue. All right, we've also added another sponsor to the Brandon House Show, Brandon House Live, and that is VoltaWireless.com. Volta, V-O-L-T-A, VoltaWireless.com. If you want to just download the app on your current iPhone or Android, you can do that, and look at this. Just download the Volta Wireless app, and within minutes, not even network operators will be able to track your location, your identity, communications, internet activity, financial transactions, and more. You can try Volta without providing any personal information. Replace your current mobile provider if you want. Stop big tech tracking every move. Freedom is just clicks away, and you can add this app to your current phone. Again, unlimited private talk, text, high-speed data, $39.99 per month. Be sure you sign up, and when you do, please use the code WVW, as in Worldview Weekend. Use that code WVW, and we get credit, and this company, Volta Wireless, and their owner, Dave Sinclair, will support back some of those funds to keep our show going. So please, go to Volta Wireless, V-O-L-T-A, VoltaWireless.com, VoltaWireless.com, and be sure to use that promo code VWV for Worldview Weekend, WVW, right? All right, we're going to take a quick break because I actually need to run to my office and pick up a book that I forgot to bring to the studio, which I want to do, and then we are going to be joined by John Eitzmo. So, Logan, if you want to run a quick spot, and then we'll be right back after this.
Hello, I'm Brandon House, and I cannot stress enough how important it is that you go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code WVW, as in Worldview Weekend. Not only will you save up to 66% on sheets, towels, blankets, dog beds, pet beds, bathrobes, slippers, moccasins, and any of the 110-plus products. Not only will you save up to 66% on your purchase by using the very powerful promo code WVW, but did you know that with each purchase, a generous portion comes back to WVW Broadcast Network? Last year in 2021, we were able to replace all of our 12-year-old plus cameras. They were at least 12 years old. They were old HD cameras. We were able to get brand new 4K cameras because you used the promo code WVW. That's how important it is. You may think, well, is it really that important? Yeah, it is. We wouldn't have, I don't think, the brand new cameras we have today if we had not had your support by going to MyPillow.com and using the promo code WVW. Now, not only do we have to buy new equipment, maintain the equipment, but we have bandwidth bill. Every month, we pay thousands of dollars in storage and bandwidth so that you can watch the free TV shows at WVW. If you listen to the radio show for free, I have to pay for the bandwidth. The radio shows and TV shows are free for you to watch, but I have to pay for the bandwidth. How do we cover that bill? One way is by those of you that go to MyPillow.com and you use the promo code WVW, as in Worldview Weekend, WVW. Will you do that right now? Will you do me another favor? Will you ask your family and friends to go to MyPillow.com? Look, we all need sheets, towels, blankets, comforters, dog beds, bathrobes, slippers, moccasins. You're not only supporting a great company and the work of Mike Lindell, you're also supporting the free radio and TV shows at WVW Broadcast Network. I really need you to go there right now. Please, don't delay. Go right now to MyPillow.com and use the promo code WVW. This is a great way for you to support our work and get something in return. Please do it right now. MyPillow.com and use the promo code WVW. Thank you.
All right, welcome back. Glad you are with us. I want to bring up a couple articles real quick. Let's see if we can find them here. Go to worldviewreport.com. worldviewreport.com. I thought I put them up here. Maybe I didn't put them up here yet. All right, pull that down. I think I know where to look for them real quick. I want to show you this these two articles because this is what caused me to call. This is what caused me to call John Eitzmo today and have him come on, is that I saw two articles today where the left, they're having a fit. They're having a fit and accusing the Supreme Court and the state of Florida of trying to establish a religion or violating the separation of church and state. All right, here's the first one. Here we go. Look at this one. CNN. How the Supreme Court is dismantling the separation of church and state. Here's the other one. Some teachers alarmed by Florida's civics training approach on religion and slavery. And of course, we'll get into this article, but I want to talk about this, the myth of separation of church and state. I wanted to get to my office here and bring on this book. This is a book I wrote in 2005 called One Nation Under Man, The Worldview War Between Christians and the Secular Left. You want to show this, Logan? Come back to me. Here we go. This book here. I wrote this book in 2005. And I have a lot about our founding fathers, and I have a lot about the myth of the separation of church and state. The big lie, page 30. Talk about the big lie. Little do we know in 2005, the big lie would be a big part of our lives as far as being accused of the big lie. But here was the liberals' big lie. And I said, the liberal humanist desire to kick God of America and their desire to do it has been forged by an outright myth propagated through the deliberate misrepresentation of the Founding Fathers' original intent. Americans have bought the lie that the founders were secular men who built a nation on secular principles and ideals. Most Americans believe the term separation of church and state is found in the U.S. Constitution, but it is not. If you're looking for a constitutional source for the idea, however, you'll find it in the Constitution of the former Soviet Union. Quote, in order to ensure it to citizens' freedom of conscience, the church in the USSR is separated from the state and the school from the church. Freedom of religion, freedom of religious worship, and freedom of anti-religious propaganda is recognized for all citizens, end quote. So it was never in our legal documents as a nation, founding documents, but was in the former Soviet Union. I write, consistent with the intentions of those who framed the Soviet Constitution, today secular humanist liberals use the concept to enforce the belief that the religion of God should have no part in American civil government policy or laws at any level, local, state, or federal. And I go on to describe that by the term religion, our founding fathers were talking about the general principles of Christianity, a belief in God, the laws of nature and nature's God, the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments. Many of us know the quote, the phrase by Thomas Jefferson, there should be a high wall of separation. But it was written by Thomas Jefferson to the Danbury Association of Baptists, who were concerned about one day, would there be a state religion? Would there be a church or a denomination that was particularly endorsed and promoted by the state? Thomas Jefferson, writing back, said, no, there should always be a high wall of separation. What he was referring to was that the government is not going to get into the business of recognizing one denomination over another. But that did not mean that they were not promoting, or did they not believe in, the general principles of Christianity or the promotion of religion. Religion, after all, if you look up the definition, is simply a system set or collection of beliefs. That's a religious system or religion, a system set or collection of beliefs. Everyone has a theology. Theos means God. And of course, our founding fathers built America as a constitutional republic, specifically because they understood the ideas of the prophet Jeremiah, who said that the heart of men are desperately wicked above all else, who can know it, and that men therefore needed checks and balances. They also noticed in the scripture of God the lawgiver, the just God, the lawgiver, and they noticed the different things that God oversaw. And so they decided, the founders did, to separate and have checks and balances, and our legal system, our legislative branch, our judicial branch, our executive branch, to have the separation of powers so that there would be those checks and balances against the sinful desires and wishes of men. But they specifically gave us a constitutional republic because they did not believe in democracy, the rule of the 51%. The founders called it mobocracy. They said that a democracy is a volcano. It's the devil's own. It always ends badly. They did not want us to be a democracy. The majority decides, because they understood the evil hearts of men. Therefore, they said, we'll be a constitutional republic. Well, what did that mean? I've told you a million times, I'll tell you again. The leading scholar for the Founding Fathers, William Blackstone, when asked what is a constitutional republic, said, what the divine is ruled on, we don't rule against. So yes, the Founding Fathers believed in God. They believed in the general principles of Christianity. They believed in religion. They did not believe in a separation of church and state that is now defined, meaning that Christians cannot profess their belief, their religious beliefs, publicly in the public square. They were all for that. That's why we ended up with the First Amendment. You couldn't even get the Constitution ratified till we got these Bill of Rights that were to be 10 handcuffs onto the central government to stop the federal government from abusing the states. And therefore, that's how we got it ratified. Today, those handcuffs, 10 Bill of Rights, have been taken off the federal government and put onto the states. They now seek to decide when we have freedom of speech, freedom of religion, the right to assemble, etc., etc. The myth of the separation of church and state comes really down to the definition. Did the founders believe in a separation of church and state? Yes, if you mean they believe that the state should stay off the back of the church and Christian people professing their faith in the public square. That's absolutely what they believed. But the ACLU, started by communist Roger Baldwin, wants you to believe that they were for a separation of church and state that is defined like this. You're never to profess your belief in the public square as a Christian. Period. No, the founders just wanted the government to stay off the back of the church. They did not want a state established religion or denomination preferred over another. Am I for a separation of church and state? If you go with the Founding Fathers' idea and concept of keep the government off the back of the church, keep the government off the back of Christians and conservatives, allow for freedom of speech in the public square, absolutely. No state religion, no state denomination, no federal denomination, no denomination over one. But if you mean the ACLU definition, you can't profess your beliefs publicly, religiously? No, I'm not for that. So the American people have been hoodwinked and they've been lied to. And that's exactly what's going on in these articles on CNN and why they're having a fit about the curriculum down in Texas, which generally is talking about the religious beliefs that America was founded on, the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, the laws of nature and nature's God, and the general principles of Christianity. Joining me now is attorney John Eitzmo. John, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us.
Against
the communists. Individuals that were now protesting
communists. Hold on,
I'm
getting two things in my ear tonight. I don't know what all that was. Okay, how you doing, John?
I am doing great.
All right. So what do you make of this? Maybe have you pull your camera down just as, or have you lean up? There you go. There you are. Tell me what you make of this first article by CNN. How the Supreme Court is dismantling the separation of church and state. And then, of course, they're saying this because the Supreme Court's saying this man does have the right to privately pray on a football field at the end of a game privately, or even if other people want to join him. That's not the school district establishing a religion. Can you comment on this and your thoughts on the myth of the separation of church and state?
Absolutely. We at the Foundation for Moral Law filed an amicus brief in support of Coach Kennedy in this case. And we were very pleased to see that the majority opinion of this case very much paralleled many of the things that we said in our brief. The article you're talking about from CNN, titled How the Supreme Court is Dismantling the Separation of Church and State, as I recall, I don't recall that anywhere in that article did they even mention that separation of church and state is not what the Constitution says. The Constitution, First Amendment, says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And sometimes they don't like to mention that last part, free exercise thereof. But as you say, this nation was founded upon a belief in God. You go back to our founding document, the Declaration of Independence. It begins with the words that we are entitled to our independence by the laws of nature and of nature's God. Goes on to say that our self-evident truths are that all men are not evolved, but created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, which is the only firm basis for believing in equality and the only firm basis for believing in rights. For those who are saying that this decision violates their religious freedom, I would ask, where do they get that religious freedom other than from a higher source than man, being God? Now, here is the decision itself. In fact, it's a lengthy decision, and you have your couple concurrences and a dissent of three. But It is, in my opinion, an excellent decision. And the point of the matter is that, yes, we believe in freedom of religion in this country. The founders believed in freedom of religion. In 1789, when they drafted the Bill of Rights, the very same week that they adopted the First Amendment, speaking about no establishment and free exercise of religion, that same week, they also formed a committee to establish chaplains for Congress and chaplains for the military, and had a national day of prayer that they established at that time. Clearly, they didn't mean the absolute separation that CNN is talking about and that the ACLU was talking about. In fact, even the dissenting opinion in this case doesn't go nearly that far.
Fascinating. Talk to me about this article. I don't know if you had a chance to read this one. The Tampa Bay Times, some teachers alarmed by Florida civic training approach on religion and slavery. South Florida has school educators are alarmed. Several South Florida high school educators are alarmed that a new state civics initiative designed to prepare students to be virtuous citizens, God forbid we have virtuous citizens, maybe those school shootings would stop, is infused with a Christian and conservative ideology after a 3A training session in Broward County last week. Teachers who spoke to the Times Herald said they don't object to the state's new standards for civics, but they do take issue with how the state wants them to be taught. It was very skewed, said Barbara Siegel, a 12th grade government teacher at Fort Lauderdale High School. Quote, there was a very strong Christian fundamentalist way toward analyzing different quotes and different documents that was concerning, end quote. The civics training, which is part of Governor Ron DeSantis' Civics Literacy Excellence Initiative, underscores the tension that has been building around the education and classrooms have become the battleground for politically contentious issues. In Florida, DeSantis and the Republican-led legislature have pushed policies that limit what schools can teach about race, gender, identity, and certain aspects of history. Those dynamics come into full view last week. They came into full view when trainers told Broward teachers the nation's founders did not desire a strict separation of church and state, downplayed the role the colonies and the United States had in the history of slavery in America, and pushed a judicial theory favored by legal conservatives like DeSantis that require people to interpret the Constitution as the framers intended it, not as a living, evolving document, according to three educators who attended the training. Well, that's hilarious, because that's exactly how you should interpret it, through the original intent of the founders. But they got upset that it's not seen as something that is living, breathing, or legal positivism, moral relativism applied to the law, or society evolves, morals evolve, the law evolves. So they're upset, and I guess they're upset because the founding fathers are presented to be holding to a view of nature's, the laws of nature, nature's God. What else did you find they're upset about, John?
Well, the interesting thing about that Tampa Bay Times article is that it cites and quotes a number of teachers who had expressed some concerns about this civics training approach. It doesn't present a single teacher who held the other view. Obviously, this is a very biased article. And when these teachers are simply being given factual information about the founding fathers, about the Constitution, about these issues that we're talking about, yes, there'd be a few who would be upset about those few that have been teaching things one way, presenting only the facts that they want their students to hear and don't want to hear the other side presented. But the facts that are being talked about here are simply that. This is fact. To say that the founders did not intend an absolute separation of church and state, of course they didn't. In fact, the Congress, at the time they declared independence, they knelt together in prayer. And the Congress that adopted the Bill of Rights likewise called for a time of prayer. In fact, they would even have church services that they would allow to be held in the legislative chambers. Sure, it's absolute fact. They didn't intend this absolute separation that is a creature of the imagination of the ACLU and other groups like this. And the idea that the Constitution should not be interpreted as the founders intended it, well, if they don't believe the founders' interpretation should govern, then why did they even bother to quote people like Thomas Jefferson and his wall of separation of church and state? Obviously, they believe the founders' intention has some meaning, but this approach that they're talking about, that you've just referred to here, this living constitution or evolving constitution, what I personally would call a silly putty constitution that any judge can mold to mean anything he wants it to mean, it's really the same thing as no constitution at all. What it means is any judge can shape the constitution to mean anything he wants it to mean. Not that we, the people, get to do so, but it'll be done by unelected federal judges, particularly by a 5-4 majority of unelected lawyers who are serving as our Supreme Court. That is not any way to protect liberties. Remember this, the same court that can read into the Constitution rights that are not there, or government powers that are not there, can also read out of the Constitution rights that are there, or limitations on power that are there. Living Constitution is a very dangerous approach. It is no Constitution at all. We want an enduring Constitution, and that's what our Founding Fathers gave us.
Here's a quote from the article today, TampaBay.com. A review of more than 200 pages of the state's presentations shows the Founding Fathers' intent and the misconceptions about their thinking were a main theme of the training. One slide underscored that the founders, listen now, quote, the founders expected religion to be promoted because they believed it to be essential to civic virtue, end quote. Without virtue, another slide noted, citizens become licentious and become subject to tyranny. What is wrong with that? And it's true. We've already explained by religion, they meant a belief in God, the laws of nature, nature's God. But who in their right mind, with all the school shootings going on, people being shot in the street, I read of someone walking in an upscale part of New York, shot in execution style while pushing their baby carriage with their child in it. Who on God's green earth would be opposed to the idea of teaching the religion, being the laws of nature and nature's God, the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not covet, etc., that because we want people to have virtue and we don't want them to be licentious, because if you become licentious, then it's going to require tyranny, a bigger government to get everybody under control that's acting like a fool and murdering and anarchy. I mean, who could be opposed to this? But of course, we do know our Supreme Court in 1980 ruled in Kentucky, which set federal precedent, kids can't look at the Ten Commandments. That's not worked out so well for us, has it?
It certainly hasn't. That was a 5-4 decision. In all of these separation of church and state decisions, that was probably the most extreme of all of them. And I very, very seriously doubt that that's the way the Supreme Court would look at that issue today. In fact, the Supreme Court in Van Orden versus Perry did say that under some circumstances, at least, the Ten Commandments can be displayed in public because they have historical value. They are really a foundation on which our legal and moral system is based. But you ask, who could be opposed to that? Well, the answer is those who are trying to establish a religion of secular humanism or atheism in this nation. And as to the Founding Fathers wanting to promote religion, well, all you have to do is look to what they said. George Washington, I think he'd qualify as a Founding Father. George Washington, in his farewell address, said, of all the dispositions and habits that lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. John Adams, our second president, said that our Constitution was made only for a religious and moral people. It is wholly inadequate for the government of any other. Yes, the Founding Fathers believed that. And there is no reason in the world why children should not be taught that. In fact, I would suggest that one of the main purposes of Governor DeSantis and Florida officials in bringing in this new educational training in civics for their teachers is the fact that study after study shows that children today, in fact, adults today as well, have an abysmal ignorance about America's history and about America's Constitution.
Absolutely.
And this is designed to remedy that, and it is entirely appropriate.
They also say on slavery, state curriculum, that 2/3 of the Founding Fathers were slave owners, but emphasized that, quote, even those that held slaves did not defend the institution, end quote. Well, that is true. Some of them openly wrote, you know, this was not a good idea, and they thought it should be abolished. Yeah, they owned slaves. Some of them repented of it and started trying to move toward getting rid of it.
You want to comment on this?
Well, part of this goes back to this so-called 1619 project of the New York Times, which is utter fiction, and yet it's being passed as history today. And certainly slavery is an evil that is part of our history, as it is part of the history of the world as a whole. But I think the unique thing about America is that here in America, the real story of America has been the drive to abolish slavery and the drive to go beyond slavery toward a system of equality. It's something we're still working on, of course, but that's the real story of America. And the question I think needs to be asked here is, can you show me any society in the world other than Judeo-Christian societies where people have actively worked to eliminate slavery?
Exactly. Can you tell me, though, of a few of the founding fathers that you know were opposed to slavery, or even if they owned them, were saying, okay, this got to stop, and it came to the realization that why this needed to stop?
George Washington, for example, was opposed to slavery, and he provided in his will that his slaves would be freed. Thomas Jefferson had expressed opposition to slavery, but honestly, sometimes Jefferson's words and his actions did not always match up, but he certainly sowed the seeds. James Madison said the whole Bible is against slavery, and yet he was a slaveholder. And Patrick Henry had spoken against slavery. Many of those from some of the non-slave states, Gouverneur Morris, John Adams, John Quincy Adams is later, but certainly John Quincy Adams, Samuel Adams is who I meant to say there. Many others belong to abolition societies. Benjamin Rush, many others strongly opposed to slavery. And yes, they sowed the seeds for the abolition of slavery, and it took some time for that to be realized, but it did come about, and we are still working to achieve equality here.
Well, we're going to get you back on more regularly. You're a fountain of information. I quoted you many times in my book in 2005, One Nation Under Man. What is your website, John?
Best website to reach me would be that of the Foundation for Moral Law, where I serve as senior counsel, Ed. But anyway, is senior counsel. And the website for the foundation is simply morallaw.org.
Morallaw.org?
If you Google anything close to that, you'll find us.
Morallaw.org. You guys really got that URL, morallaw.org.
That's right.
That's a great URL. Okay, your book that I have in my library and have for years is, help me with the name of it, Christianity
and the Constitution.
That's what I was going to say. I got it right. Christianity and the Constitution. I think that's by far probably your best book, wouldn't you say?
Well, I would have a few years ago. And the purpose of that book was to refute the notion that the founding fathers were all deists and skeptics. They weren't all Christians, but the vast majority were professing Christians. But I have a new series. It's a three-volume set. Here's the first volume, titled Historical and Theological Foundations of Law. And if you don't have that, Brandon, you and I need to talk about getting you one.
Oh, yeah, because I want to have you on about that. We'll probably need to do several shows on it. I also want to have you back pretty quick after the 4th to talk about the Declaration of Independence, which is the foundation for the Constitution. And it's talking about that since governments are created by man for the purpose of securing liberties, if after a long train of abuses, the problems aren't fixed, the government can be altered and abolished. I don't know if I believe the poll. I'd have to have someone look into it who that's their expertise. But I did see a report today that stated that a percentage of Americans would be willing to come up against their government if it came to that. You know, and a poll, I can't remember where I saw it. It was on Drudge Report or where I was just looking for it real quick. But that people are more than willing, if necessary, to enact the principles mentioned in the Declaration of Independence. And, of course, we're seeing our FBI, many of our agencies, become very Stalin-like, you know. So what are you want to come back and talk about that, make a comment before we close?
I'd be glad to talk about that sometime. I'll just say right now that, first of all, we mentioned already the repeated references to God in the Declaration of Independence. There is no wonder that the far left today does not like to cite the Declaration of Independence. Mm. By their view of separation of church and state, the Declaration of Independence is unconstitutional. But yes, the Declaration clearly speaks about the doctrine of interposition, that is, the duty of lesser government officials to stand against the higher officials when those higher officials have become tyrannical. That's what this nation was based on. That's what the American War of Independence was all about.
Is that the doctrine?
That's the basic principle.
Is that the doctrine of the lesser magistrate?
Doctrine of lesser magistrates, before we got that name, it was called the doctrine of interposition, which is the term I would still use for it, yes.
So here, I did find the article. We'll bring you back next week. A quarter of Americans open to taking up arms against government, poll says. Survey of 1,000 registered U.S. voters also reveals that most Americans agree government is corrupt and rigged. So again, let me ask you this in closing. I keep saying that. Do you think we're headed for a civil war in America?
That's a good question. For one thing, I think one of the problems right now is that government in Washington, D.C. has come to regard its citizens as enemies. And that's part of the problem. Now, unlike the war between the states, in this case, the division is not so much sectional. In other words, it isn't a matter of right of North versus South. It's more, if anything, it's a matter of urban versus rural. So I'm certainly hoping it doesn't come to that, but there are worse things that could happen.
Well, happy 4th of July. Morallaw.org. Again, is that it? Morallaw.org?
That's right.
All right. Look forward to having you back after the 4th, John.
Thank you, and happy and blessed Independence Day.
Same to you. That's John Eitzmo checking in, folks. You ought to get his books, certainly Christianity and the Constitution, the other ones he mentioned. John Eitzmo. We'll get him back next week. He's great, isn't he? A wealth of information, as you can tell.
The 19th annual Ozarks Worldview Weekend. Tickets are now available, and just like last year, it will sell out this year as well. We only have seating for 1,000 people, filled up last year in 2021, and 2022 is sure to do the same. Hello, I'm Brandon House. Join us for the 19th annual Ozarks Worldview Weekend on beautiful Lake of the Ozarks. The resort is right on the water. It's all inclusive. You come there and you stay and your meals are there and you register for our conference. And we have a great lineup this year. Keynote speakers in person will include Dr. Peter McCullough, internist and cardiologist, an expert on pandemics and bioweapons. We'll have with us CEO of MyPillow, Mike Lindell, Roger Stone, Patrick Wood, expert on technocracy and globalism, Annie Cyrus, born in Iran and an expert on the Middle East, Dr. Lee Merritt, former military surgeon and expert on bioweapons, Dr. Andy Woods, pastor, lawyer, and also expert on Bible prophecy, Terry Turchi, former assistant deputy director of the counterterrorism division of the FBI, author and journalist, an expert on illegal immigration and the border crisis, Leo Holman, Karen Kingston, she is a bioweapons analyst. This is the incredible lineup. There's also the option of the Thursday night banquet concert, and then also the luncheon on Saturday, the WVW Foundation luncheon on Saturday. Now, these things on Thursday night and the luncheon on Saturday are optional. You don't have to attend those if you don't want to, but you can. And you can get your tickets along with your general seating or your priority seating tickets for the conference itself at WVWTVstore.com. All the details are there, WVWTVstore.com. Be sure to call the resort. Use that promo code WRLD, or just say Worldview Weekend, or the code WRLD, and you will get the weekend rate when you book your room reservations at the Tantara Margaritaville Resort, right there on beautiful Lake of the Ozarks, 1,150 miles of shoreline, rolling hills of the Ozarks. It's gorgeous. So don't delay. It will sell out. WVWTVstore.com, WVWTVstore.com. If you prefer to order your tickets over the phone, you can call Melissa and or text her at 901-825-0652, 901-825-0652, 901-825-0652. If you prefer to order your tickets over the phone. Otherwise, WVWTVstore.com, WVWTVstore.com, the 19th annual Ozarks Worldview Weekend.
All right, I want to bring on a new guest here tonight in just one second. Before I do, let me go over to WVWTVstore.com. Look at the page here, WVWTVstore.com. I want to remind you about our Worldview Weekend coming up the middle of October 2019. The middle of October 2022. It's our 19th annual Ozarks Worldview Weekend. There are general seating tickets. There are priority seating tickets. The priority is just simply up front. It's on beautiful Lake of the Ozarks here at this beautiful resort, Tantara Resort, now called Margaritaville. They changed the name. But what are you going to do? We were using it for a while before they changed the name. But our contract is with the Tantara Resort, as it's been known since the 60s. It's gone through a total remodel. It's beautiful, as you can see. And we're going to have a lot of great speakers live in person starting Friday night, October 14th, and it concludes Sunday morning, October 16th, with Pastor Andy Woods. Live in person, Dr. Peter McCullough, myself, Mike Lindell, Roger Stone, Patrick Wood, Annie Cyrus, Dr. Lee Merritt, Dr. Andy Woods, Terry Turchie, Leo Holman, and Karen Kingston. You'll find the Margaritaville Lake of the Ozarks phone number right there. Be sure to use the code WRLD to get the group rate we negotiated, and you can register online. If you prefer to register over the phone, you can call our office during normal business hours, leave a message, or text. That'd be best. Text. Let us know what you're wanting, and we'll get back to you, 901-825-0652 to text and let us know that you are wanting to get in touch. In addition to the Ozark Conference, we also have, of course, the Foundation Luncheon on Saturday and then the Ozark Optional Banquet on Thursday night. This year I'll be doing, as I have the last 2 years, this is my third year, to do a full concert, fully orchestrated. Some of you know, others of you don't know. That's actually how I started out, as a classically trained tenor, doing concerts in that of Chuck Swindoll, D. James Kennedy, and others. By the way, Clarence Thomas mentioned D. James Kennedy this week in an opinion that this is one of the groups that was labeled by the Southern Poverty Law Center along with the KKK and stuff. That's that D. James Kennedy. And I was sang at his church for his national program and for his conferences and different things over the years. And so that's how I actually started out, fell over into writing and speaking and radio and television. But I still do a concert or two a year, and we produce it into a TV special. Of course, I'm actually working on a new CD right now that will be Christmas songs. And if you're like, well, I don't know, can this guy really sing? All you got to do is go to the banquet part, the WVW Ozarks Banquet Concert Thursday night. Go to the bottom of the page, click that button right there, and what it'll do is bring up the concert from 2020, and you can watch the concert from 2020. It's a full concert. You can watch it, and you'll get an idea whether you want to participate. I'll be doing all brand-new, fully orchestrated songs I commissioned, had done specifically for me, of Christmas classics. It's middle of October, but it'll start feeling like the Christmas season before long. We'll film it and make it a Christmas special that we'll play here. So if you want to be a part of that WVW Ozark Banquet Christmas Banquet Concert, it's a beautiful banquet. That's Thursday night. That's optional. That's at WVWTVStore.com. And also, don't forget, at WVWTVStore.com, guys, we have the emergency food supplies. Click emergency food supplies. We have a ton. We had two huge orders come in. I went ahead and put up a lot of money up front to get a huge supply so we could get caught up on orders. So while we have it, I suggest you take advantage of it because they clearly are orchestrating some kind of food crisis on purpose. 3 month, 6 month, 72-hour test kit if you want to sample it, 4 week emergency supply, 1 year, all of it at WVWTVStore.com. It's a big part of our general operating budget. I know you can buy it elsewhere. Thank you for buying it from us at WVWTVStore.com. Joining me now is Don Brown. I'm going to have Don back because we're going to just scratch the surface. Don, welcome back, or I should say welcome to the program. Glad to have you with us tonight.
Hey, what a great honor, and you got me in the Christmas spirit. I'm going to get that CD, but I think you should cut a 4th of July CD also. Maybe a little late for this year, but let's get it done for next year.
You know what, Don? That was actually, we actually kicked that around several months ago, yeah. Trying to get it done. But I got this guy named Mike Lindell that keeps me so busy. But it actually is on the list. We thought, okay, let's go with the Christmas one. We have more time. And then, but actually, believe it or not, it's already on the list to do one next year. Our next one after the Christmas one is already slated to be fully orchestrated, patriotic, lots of brass, kind of like the military orchestras that you probably are used to. Because you have a military background, don't you, Don?
Yes, I do. I'm a U.S. Navy vet, 16 years. Altogether, 5 active, and the greatest experience of my life. If I had to do it all over again, I would have done it again. One of the great questions of my life is, should I have gotten out when I got out? So it's hard these days with the woke rules and regulations this administration is forcing onto the military, and we feel sorry for those men and women that are that are standing in harm's way on our behalf, but we give them the greatest deal of respect. So thanks for bringing that up. I appreciate it, Rand.
Absolutely. Thank you for your service. Let's talk about your book. It's called Extortion 17, correct?
It is. Copy right here. Call sign Extortion 17, the shoot down of SEAL Team 6. And it talks about the shoot down of U.S. military helicopter in Afghanistan in 2011, which was brimful of Navy SEALs, the largest loss of life.
Can you see that? Can you see that B-roll footage that's rolling right now? Can you see that?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Yes, I can.
So while you're talking, we're going to show some of the footage because you and I are mutual friends with Billy and Karen Vaughn, their son Aaron Vaughn, one of them that was shot down. And they're a big part of my documentary Siege. So we're going to be rolling some of that B-roll footage while you talk. So that was the name of the chopper, Extortion 17, that was shot down in August of 2011?
That's right, August 6, 2011, about 96 days after the Operation Neptune Spear, which was the code name for the Navy SEAL mission that took out bin Laden. So you had about a three-month interim in there, and the Taliban was moving forces in for the sole purpose of shooting down a U.S. chopper. We knew it. We intercepted intelligence, yet we did not give these guys any protection. This whole mission probably should never have been flown. We don't know how it was flown. But it was the largest loss of life, not only in the U.S. Navy SEAL history, but also in the history of the Afghan War. And so many things went wrong in that mission. And I have written a book on it based largely upon a 1,250-page military report that was strangely declassified within a period of just a few weeks. That never happened. Somebody wanted the truth out on this. And it was a major cover-up. It was an example of the Obama administration, in my opinion, basically sacrificing men and women through its foolish rules of engagement, and by basically treating the lives of the Taliban as if they were more important than the lives of Americans. And as you may also know, Brandon, a documentary movie was released August 1st called Fallen Angel, Call Sign Extortion 17. It's now being shown through Salem Media. The director, Stephen Spivey, and Carl Hortzman, the producer at Triple Horse Studio in Atlanta, did a fabulous job of that, and I hope everybody will get a chance to see that docudrama movie as well.
It comes out August 1st?
It was released this past August 1st. You can find the trailers all over YouTube for Fallen Angel. The movie is available on Salem Media. Salem just, of course, released 2,000 Mules, and I hope I don't get you blacklisted for mentioning that movie, as I would... was happening in some networks, but
are you kidding? First of all, not on
I'm
this.
Pulling your leg,
okay,
you're not pulling your leg there, Rana. But
okay,
Fallen Angel, from what we told, outsold everything that Salem had ever produced in terms of a movie or until the release of 2,000 Mules. I've got a feeling we'll have some competition on that, but I highly recommend it. It does tell the story in a 90-minute, docudrama movie about the basic. A tragedy of what happened to these men whose memory we still seek to honor today, and we're still trying to get to the bottom of why they were sacrificed.
Were you involved in that production?
Yes, I was involved. I was interviewed a number of times in the production. We had about 30 U.S. Army Rangers come up from Fort Benning from the 75th Ranger Regiment who participated. It was a docudrama, so we showed lots of evidence on it, and parts of the shoot down were recreated by the directors and producers, and it's very, very well done. If you see the film, and I hope that you'll get a chance to, Brandon, it'll make your blood boil.
Oh, I already wrote the name down. I'm going to buy it and watch it.
Fallen Angel, Call Sign Extortion 17 at Salem Media or salemnow.com. You can get there and see the trailer. So the movie's now been out about 11 months. It's done very, very well. And it's helped open some eyes. My book on the shoot down was released in 2015. And at the time the book was released, it was Karen and Billy came to me, and we met in Atlanta in 2013. And after the shoot down in 2011, just a few weeks afterwards, in October 2011, the shoot down being in August, military invited members of the fallen, family members of the fallen, to come to Little Creek, Virginia for a briefing. Army General Brigadier General Colt was talking about what happened, and things weren't adding up. And someone asked, for example, "General, what happened to the black box on the helicopter?" And the general said, "Well, it got washed away in a flood." And that was kind of the first one of the big major questions is, what are they trying to cover up here? Well, as the general was was giving his presentation to family members, there were these senior enlisted guys that are walking around handing out these envelopes. And inside the envelopes were these CDs. Now we'd use a thumb drive, but they were CDs. And on those CDs were 1,250 pages, not just of the report itself, but of evidence collected. And ordinarily, that is going to be highly classified and not released for a period of at least 50 years. But see, like I mentioned, Brandon, somebody wanted the truth out. So I met with Karen and Billy in Atlanta at a Denny's restaurant, as I recall, over an omelet one morning. And they discussed the case with me. And I guess they felt I could trust me. So they Billy handed me this little stick drive now. The data had been placed on that. And I went through 1,250 pages of information had now suddenly been non-classified, and I came to the conclusion that these men did not have to die. This mission was flown foolishly, as the helicopter was. I mean, the helicopter, we lost contact with the helicopter. It was flying. You know, it was supposed to be mission from 10 minutes up and 10 minutes down, and the SEAL team was supposedly going after a mid-level Taliban target named Kareem Tahir. This is SEAL Team 6, the most prestigious of all our military units. SEAL Team 6 would not fly a mission against a mid-level Taliban operative. So we don't know why they were put in the air. The chopper goes up. 10 minutes later, we lose contact with it. It's supposed to be on the ground. Something has gone wrong. And then 7 minutes after that, it's blown out of the air. And we've got no explanation from the military as to what happened at all at this point, other than they claimed it was a fog of war. We also know one of the things that shocked me as I was researching this, and of course, I'm a military vet, but I did not even realize, even, you know, 11, 12 years into the Afghan war, that by the time 2011 rolls around, Obama was forcing our special operators, mainly Navy SEALs and U.S. Army Rangers, to carry out these missions with members of the Taliban, Afghan. Maybe that wasn't a Freudian slip, the Afghan National Army. And the problem is you don't know who of the Afghan National Army has been infiltrated by the Taliban.
In fact, in that documentary that he's showing B-roll footage of, that's my documentary, Sabotage. I think I said right. Siege. It's Sabotage. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to see Sabotage, but okay, it's six hours. But in there, we have Billy Vaughn at our conference there on the platform, who, by the way, is sitting right next to Phil Haney, who the former DHS officer that has died under mysterious causes. I know what the government's ruled, but many of us don't believe it. But anyway, Billy's sitting right next to him. He talks about the fact that there was also in that documentary where there was someone they've become very close friends with who they didn't know that night, but now she's like a family member to them. Maybe you can tell me her name. I can't remember her name, but she was in a plane up above watching, and they saw guys on the ground with cylinders that looked like, shoulder-launched missiles and stuff, and they're like, wave them off, and they would not do it. Let us go in and take care of this threat against Extortion 17 coming in. Tell us about that.
You're talking about Captain Joni Marquez.
Yes.
And let me set the stage a bit. This flight should have been 10 minutes up from wheels up, wheels down. And you're flying it. It takes off at 2:22 a.m. local time. So you got to get on the ground because, you know, it's very loud. And the noise can create a target in and of itself. So as it takes off, it's accompanied by two U.S. Army Apache helicopters. But circling overhead, there's an AC-130 gunship, which if you've ever seen a C-130, it's a C-130 loaded full of weapons. And that C-130 is watching this chopper move toward the landing zone. And what's happened is that both of these choppers, Extortion 17 and its sister chopper, Extortion 16, have flown a mission earlier, and they dropped off Army Rangers who've engaged in a firefight with the Taliban. And the Rangers have defeated the Taliban. Now the remnants of the Taliban are moving away and retreating from the Rangers, headed toward the landing zone for Extortion 17. The first thing that this gunship tries to do, it asks for permission to take out and attack the Taliban. They call them squirters, moving toward the landing zone. Well, because of Obama's rules of engagement, permission was denied because one of his foolish rules at this point was called the disengage. Well, I call it, because I've written on the rules of engagement, the disengage upon retreat rule. So therefore, if you are fighting, you know, your enemy and they're trying to kill you, they turn and run, you can't track them back down, even though they're going to come back and try to kill you later. So the permission was denied for this gunship, of which Captain Johnny Marquez was the firing officer, to take out the enemy. The enemy was bounding down this valley, as Johnny has said, with cylindrical objects that could have been an RPG. The military's report says a chopper was shot down by an RPG, but they can't take them out. So then the chopper, then the AC-130 begins to plead with flight control, will turn the SEAL team around. There's no reason to fly the SEAL team in there. They're flying into basically a trap. Permission was denied there also. So Joni stepped forward. And between my book being released in 2015 until the movie was released last year, one of the things we hoped and prayed for is that people would have the courage to step forward. And Joni was the first one to step forward. And her, I really appreciated what she did, because people, you know, when this book came out, you know, the left was saying conspiracy theory. Well, listen, we absolutely knew what I told you is true, because there was a transcript placed into the military record showing questions and answers between the investigating team and members of that flight crew. So we knew that there had been an effort to turn the chopper around and to take out the Taliban, which was denied. But we had no faces and no names, because all the names are redacted from the investigation. But Joni stepped forward. She stepped forward because she said that her conscience would not let her live with herself. They kept her in the Air Force. They tried to put her under all types of surveillance and this sort of thing, but she could not live with herself. She was told to say nothing, but she stepped forward and she approached Billy and Karen. Then we've had others step forward as well, and some of those are interviewed actually in the movie, which I hope you'll get to see, who have stepped forward in the 5 or 6 years between the release of my book and the movie itself. And some of these folks, our late great director Stephen Spivey was able to talk to because of his connections in the Army. But people have stepped forward to corroborate what we've seen. One of the things that's crazy about this is that when the chopper went down, the military lied, the Pentagon lied. Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Laban, who was a Marine, U.S. Marine officer, who was a Pentagon spokesperson, said, hey, none of the bodies are identifiable because the crash was so severe. Well, one thing that we know is from the investigation itself, we sent a team of U.S. Army Pathfinders in immediately to look for that black box. And the Pathfinder leader testified in the investigation that I've looked at, it's the first time they have ever not been able to find a black box. First time they've never been able to find the black box. The black box mysteriously disappeared in the hour and a half or so between the chopper going down and the official report of Rangers arriving on the ground. No explanation has been given. But those Pathfinders said that a number of the bodies had been thrown from the chopper and were identifiable. But just 3 days after the shootdown, the Pentagon lied and said none were identifiable. The Pentagon did not know that I was going to be reading their own investigative report several months after the fact that showed they were lying. In addition to that, when you see the movie, and I hope that you will, Brandon, we were able to secure actual footage of the chopper burning.
Oh, wow.
We have drone footage of the chopper burning. You can see our guys laying on the ground clearly intact.
Wow.
And so what happened to the bodies is a big mystery. We believe that some may have been cremated. We don't know for sure because the Pentagon's played games. Billy and I went to Washington in 2000. Let me see. I believe it was 19. Excuse me. President Trump was in office in 2019 and spoke with the late Walter Jones, who at that time was a senior Republican on the Armed Services Committee. We spoke with Duncan Hunter, who was still in the Armed Services Committee, and Brian Mast, and Walter became so engrossed with the case, Congressman Jones, who's now passed away, that he persuaded the chairman at that time of the House Armed Services Committee, Mac Thornberry, to put a set of questions to the Pentagon, basic questions. For example, we got to run around all of them, but for example, one question is as simple as this. We have heard that Afghans from this shoot down were buried in Arlington Cemetery. Is that true or not? That's the question that the Armed Services Committee put to the Pentagon. You see, we flew the bodies of the Afghans back to Dover Air Base.
And Logan, if you've got footage, scroll through there in my documentary. You'll see footage of our American soldiers coming back with flag draped coffins that we saw a while ago. But you'll also find, there we go, but you're also, when they get inside the building, you're going to see coffins draped with the Afghan flag. the jihadi Afghan flag. And of course, what upset many of the soldiers is that they were putting that Afghan flag on what could have been the bodies of some of our soldiers.
That is precisely correct, Brandon. It was extremely upsetting to the families. It should be upsetting to every American. And a bigger question is, why are you bringing Afghan bodies back here to begin with? Well, I think I know the answer to the question. But above and beyond that, these Afghan bodies were brought back, and we don't know what happened to them. So one of the questions the Armed Services Committee put to the Pentagon on our behalf is, were bodies of Afghans buried in Arlington? Here's the answer we got. I'm paraphrasing this basically answer. The answer was, well, we have read press reports in the press that the Afghans may have been repatriated back to Afghanistan. But none of this is germane to the investigation. So rather than the Department of Army controls Arlington, rather than say, yes, they were, no, they were not, we have read press reports they may have been,
So let me ask you this. Is there any chance, I've only got like 2 minutes left. I'm going to have you back. So quick answer, because I want to have you back and go over this longer. We probably should have you for a whole hour. Quick answer, though. Are they trying to cover up the bodies because there possibly was a firefight in the air and they don't want the evidence of a firefight? Because I understand some of these guys had body, looked like they've been shot.
We did. We found bullets in the bodies of several of the guys, and they were thrown away before the investigation was over with.
Which is a crime. That's a crime.
Yes, it is. It is a violation of the military protocol. That's possible. The other thing is this. If that chopper were penetrated by Taliban, and I suspect it might have been, at this time, we had a massive, massive biometrics database in Afghanistan. And we could have identified probably if Taliban had penetrated that chopper amongst an Afghan National Army. I suspect that may have happened. But if you cremate the bodies, you destroy DNA evidence, and therefore you eliminate the ability to pin that down on the Taliban. That would have been an absolute political disaster for the Obama administration had that come out. So it's a combination of factors, but it is a violation of military law, and somebody should have been prosecuted for it.
And I want to have you back to also talk more, because they're lying when they talk about, oh, a flood washed away the black box. There's not enough rain in that area to wash a box away.
No, we pull black boxes out of 15,000 feet of water in the North Atlantic. It's just ridiculous. Those black boxes have low frequency ping emitters on them. The black box, I have no doubt, was probably taken from the chopper before the SEALs, the Rangers.
Because there's evidence that another group arrived, did some things, and took off before the Rangers got there,
That's
right?
That's correct. We've discovered that an unidentified group, you're all over it, Brandon, they had an unidentified coalition forces entered the aircraft about 30 minutes after the shoot down, surveyed the area, and left on an undisclosed road. What were they doing there? And that was left out of the military's report. We discovered that as a footnote in the official chronology of the shoot down.
And let's not forget Joe Biden. Let's not forget Joe Biden outing SEAL Team 6.
He outed SEAL Team 6 3 days after the shoot down in Washington, after the former Secretary of Defense Bob Gates had brokered an agreement amongst the senior administrators of the Obama administration to not identify the group that had taken out bin Laden, because a SEAL would a target would initially be on their back. Could have been Rangers, could have been SEALs, could have been U.S. Marines.
And by the way, this leak by Biden happened before the shoot down, right?
Yes, it did.
Because
that's correct.
Because Aaron Vaughn called his mom, she says, to us on our interview and said that he called panic saying, get us off your social media because Biden's just compromised us and they could come after the family.
Right. The Osama bin Laden mission was May 1. Biden outed the SEALs May the 3rd. The shoot down was August the 6th.
Okay, we're going to have you back. Where can people get the book?
You go on Amazon. It's all over Amazon, barnesandnoble.com. It's 17, shoot down a SEAL Team 6. And
is that
and
your website? What's your website?
DonBrownBooks.com, www.DonBrownBooksPlural.com.
Okay, I'm going to get you back on pretty quick after the 4th, because we got to go into this more.
You bet, brother. Check the film out, too, between now and then. Let's talk about that, too.
I'm going to watch it over the weekend. Folks, I hope you get his book, Extortion 17 by Don Brown. You'll love the book. Get the book. He's got a lot more to say. We're going to get him back. Thank you, Don. Happy 4th of July to you. Folks, thank you for supporting us, and thank you for watching. Take care.
Hello, I'm Brandon House. Have you watched Worldview Report? That is our new nightly Worldview broadcast. It's a 30-minute nightly television broadcast. It takes about seven of us 15 man hours a day to put this all together. You'll see what I mean and how quality it is when you watch it for free at WVWTV.com. That's our 30-minute new nightly news report. But you know what else we're doing? We're taking this and putting it at worldviewradio.com each day as an MP3. For those of you that want to just listen to it while you walk the dog, work in the kitchen, drive in the car, work out. So we're putting it up not only as a TV show, but as an MP3 as well at worldviewradio.com. We're also now taking my 90-minute live television show that airs Monday through Friday, Brennan House Live, and we're now posting that also as a free MP3 at worldviewradio.com. So you can listen to Worldview Radio, my daily radio show, as you have for years at worldviewradio.com. You can listen to my 30-minute nightly news broadcast as now an MP3 at worldviewradio.com. And you can listen to my 90-minute live television show now as an MP3 at worldviewradio.com. Now, not only are these all at worldviewradio.com, you can also watch them as a TV show at WVWTV.com. Now, here's the deal. Did you know we spend thousands of dollars a month in bandwidth, paying for the bandwidth for people to watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows for free? Not only that, do you know what it costs to keep a staff going that helps me with all this? Did you know that we also have a utility bill that is like $1,500 to $1,700, close to $2,000 a month? Because even in the Mid-South, pretty much have to keep the air conditioning going year-round or the servers could overheat. And we also are pulling a lot of electricity with our TV studio. So think about our utility bill, our insurance, the people we hire and have to pay to keep working on our team, the bandwidth we pay for, our broadband high-speed internet. You cannot believe the thousands and thousands of dollars it takes to do the television and radio programs we're doing at the quality we're doing them. Please go right now to WVWFoundation.com and make a contribution. WVWFoundation.com. You can also use our mailing address, P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee, 38027. That's again, WVW Foundation, P.O. Box 1690, Collierville, Tennessee, 38027. Thank you so much for your support.